Is transphobia child abuse? That is the statement raised by someone running a homeless youth center in New York City. And it brings up a wide range of issues with the Biden-Harris administration and what they're doing to families in this country. We'll talk about it next on the Palmetto Family Matters show. And welcome into the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. It's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters show. It is Friday, October the 18th in the year of our Lord, 2024. We're glad you're with us on this audio only edition of the show. And we got a lot to get into, and it centers around one specific story and one specific outlet. I'm reading from the Daily Caller, and we're glad to be joined by Meg Brock here on the program. She is one of the writers, one of the contributors to the story. First of all, Meg, thank you for joining us today to talk about this. When I read this story, I immediately knew I had to reach out to you to get your take on what you wrote, because I think people might not want to read the whole thing, but they might want to listen to you talk about it. So we're glad you're with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
The headline exclusive, Biden-Harris admin paves way for bureaucrats to take gender-confused kids from, quote, non-affirming, end quote, parents. So I want to start with this, Meg. This person, Alex Roque, runs the Allie Forney Center for Homeless LGBTQ Youth in New York City. And this statement that I led off the top of the show with, transphobia is child abuse, was actually asserted on a webinar hosted by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. So I'm not trying to gotcha here, Meg. I'm not Brett Baer, you're not Kamala. I'm just trying to make the connection here. Does the president have some say over the Department of Health and Human Services?
I mean, absolutely. I would say that's a big job that the president has in terms of appointing people and pushing policy and regulations. So yeah, I would say yes.
So the connector here is that this was mentioned on a webinar. Transphobia is child abuse. So as that is the overarching umbrella to this, talk about what you guys discovered in this piece.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure your listeners are aware that right now there is something that's permeating our culture, our society, called transgender ideology, is a word for it. And it's basically the belief that there are not that there that that there is not a binary view of sex, that there are more than just male and female, and that someone can change their sex, which is obviously untrue and is a lie. It's not true at all. So this ideology, I mean, thankfully, I know in South Carolina recently there was the bill passed that's banning pediatric sex change medical procedures. So we're seeing progress in that front. But I don't know if everyone at large really realizes the impact this ideology is having on our society and on our institutions. And so what we did is we really took a look at how this is impacting the child welfare system, which is the system of how we find and protect children from being abused, how we place children who need homes. And what we found was quite startling in that, to your point, what you led with, that there is this underlying idea that if a parent or a foster care family is not, quote unquote, affirming, meaning validating the gender confusion of a child, that they are harming that child and therefore may not be a suitable placement.
There was a rule passed through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services back in April, through the Administration for Children and Families, the ACF. They finalized a policy that, quote, strengthens protections for youth in foster care by clarifying how states must meet their statutory requirements to appropriately serve LGBTQI plus children in foster care. So we like to add the letter in there. The HHS Secretary Javier Becerra said every child deserves a safe and loving home. I'm a dad. She's only 7 months old, but I'm a dad. You're a mom. We both agree with that statement that every child deserves a safe and loving home.
Absolutely.
But we're starting to twist language here, aren't we? That to be safe and loving and to be affirming and to be protecting and comforting means you must commit to establishing an environment that supports the child's LGBTQI status or identity. That's not the same thing.
Right. I mean, I think that it raises a lot of serious questions about our constitutional rights in America. I mean, some of the rights that we have is the right of religious freedom. We have the right to raise our children as we see fit. But beyond that, I mean, we're not even talking. I mean, obviously, there's a religious component to this, which is something that really struck me in this research, was how so much of these interventions trying to kind of retrain parents to be LGBTQ affirming were aimed at religious families. But we're really just talking about reality here. We're talking about biology. We're talking about the fact that there are two sexes, male and female. And that's just a scientific fact. That's not anything that's controversial, at least it shouldn't be. And so now what we're seeing is through this regulation within the foster care system, but it also extends outside of the foster care system, that if you are a parent and you say you have a 12-year-old daughter and she has been online and she's confused and she's an adolescent and she's uncomfortable with her body and she thinks, wow, maybe, you know, maybe I'm not a girl, maybe I'm a boy. And if you as a loving parent help guide her back towards reality, towards accepting who she is, towards accepting her body, towards becoming the woman that she is destined to become, you are then seen as harmful and potentially abusive for simply affirming reality. And, you know, as a parent, as a mom, I mean, that idea that someone could come and potentially take your child out of your home, out of your care, because you're affirming a basic biological fact in America is really, I think it's quite scary, honestly. I think it's pretty scary.
You mentioned it. It is scary. You mentioned the religious component. We go back to some of the conversation floating around in 2020 when it came to whether or not you should do certain things in terms of vaccination or masks. And we won't get into that today. But I think there is a connector here in the same ideas that were kind of touted there, or that those who voted for a certain person in 2016 to 2020 and maybe in 2024 need to be re-educated, right? And now we have this where you mentioned it's a basic biological understanding that a person either has an XX or XY chromosomes. That's it. That is the most basic of basic things. And for thousands of years, we agreed with that. Until the last 5 minutes, it became taboo to say that. So if you are participating in foster care and you have foster care children and they are LGBTQI identifying, or if you have your own children in certain counties and in certain states, certainly California appears to be heading down this road as well. The fact is the state, lowercase s, the state, the government, can, because you espouse a view, as the late Senator Dianne Feinstein might say, because the dogma lives loudly within you, they can come into your home and take away your child. Now, that to me is a violation of parental rights. That to me is a violation of the First Amendment. There are a litany of issues here. Where, as you're reading this, as you're doing the research, as you're diving into, and I'm looking at this piece, we're talking about a SOGI model that affirm.me, four different interventions into this, something out of the Manhattan Institute policy, all of this, where is this heading? And that might be a dark picture you're about to paint for our listeners, but where is this heading?
Well, I would say it's not where it's heading. It's where is it already arrived? I just actually posted this morning another piece that I wrote about a family from Maryland who was actually lived in a county that was implementing some of these radical programs and actually had their son taken away from them as a result. So I would say where it's heading is that there are activists who genuinely believe that if you are not affirming a child's gender confusion, that you are harming them. And they really do view that as abuse, the same as if you didn't give your child food or if you physically hurt a child. And it's a little hard, I think, sometimes for people to really wrap their head around that because it seems so, so bizarre. But once you understand that, then you understand that within it's not just going to an ideology that's going to stay within the system. It's also anyone who interacts with the system. So part of our research that hasn't been published yet, our investigation, is actually dealing with a county in Ohio. And what we found is in their CPS system, so their Child Protective Service system, all it really takes for someone to quote unquote enter the system is a phone call. So if let's say there's like a teacher, for example, who, again, I'm going to use the example of a 12-year-old girl who goes to her middle school counselor and says, you know what, I think I'm a boy. My parents are not affirming me and they're that's harmful to me. Well, that teacher could essentially then just call the CPS hotline and report a case of suspected child neglect or abuse. And so then what's going to happen is that, and some of these, you know, some of the minutia of how this happens vary from state to state, but what would happen is then the Child Protective Service, the Social Services Department, will field the phone call and they're going to have to start an investigation on the family. So because of that phone call from that, you know, say we're using the example of perhaps a teacher or a counselor, CPS could show up at that family's door 24 hours later and wanting to interview the child, wanting to interview the parents. And that's all it takes for you to be quote unquote in the system. So now you are interacting with the child protective, the child welfare system. And now you could be then, hey, you know what? We actually found our investigation. You're not affirming your child. So we think we need to do an emergency hold, or we need to refer you to this program where we're going to train you to become affirming. And that's really all it takes. I don't know if most people are aware of that. And I would also say too, that the state, individual states are tied to federal regulations, because if you're getting federal dollars into your institutions, well, then you're have to be complicit with the regulations to get those dollars. So, you know, for example, a lot of our research that was piloting this was happening in Ohio, which is considered right now a red state. So the idea that, you know, I mean, obviously in California, there's legislation that's more advanced, but this is something that can happen in any community across America, wherever you live.
It certainly is. I want to get into this one thing. This is, I'm reading this again, but it feels like I'm reading it for the first time in this piece. And by the way, if you haven't read this piece, you can go to our Facebook page, Palmetto Family's Facebook page, or our Twitter page. We have sent out a link to our insider email for this week. This article is one of the articles in that email. And so I want you to guys to go read it. Here's a snippet, and we'll have to wrap here shortly. I'm not getting the cue from four other people off camera like some people were, but once LGBT youth are identified, this is a quote, the Youth Acceptance Project, or YAP, can be implemented to persuade hesitant parents to affirm their child's gender dysphoria. In an overview of YAP, the program's creator, the California-based nonprofit Family Builders, which that's just, wow. The Orwellianness of that, touts the, quote, success story of a family who became involved with the system because they, quote, struggled to accept their child as a transgender girl. After several months, there were significant improvements. The father consented to gender-affirming care for Salima. The father gave Salima a purse for her birthday. Now, understand, this is a boy. So this father gives his son a purse, and then the father once helped Salima put on a wig. Later on, we see that this program is being implemented in California, New York, Pennsylvania, and Missouri, along with Ohio. And between 2018 and 2021, in this one county, of the 34 families who started the program, 7 cases were, quote, successfully closed. I mean, they don't say anything to my face anymore about it, and they stopped being super religious around me. So that's the thing. There's your answer. The adolescent, out of the mouths of babes, we hear it. I don't know what was their problem, but they used to try to push a lot of weird religion stuff on me. This is the perfect example, and I think a big example, and one that we need to track, Meg, of the state through regulatory means, right? We talk about a huge administrative state,
right?
Through rules and through policies, not through the elected officials. Like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris can literally push this at arm's length if they wanted to.
Right.
And say, no. That's the HHS. That's what they're doing. And that's these specific counties. But we all understand the money flows. And what this is doing is clamping down on a parent, a mom or a dad, in the privacy of their own home, doing nothing more than sharing a biblical worldview with their children. That's where the problem lies.
A scientific worldview as well. I'd also say something we didn't really mention, but so we investigated all of these, how this investigation really got started is that In 2016, there was a $10 million federal grant that was given to a group of researchers to develop these child welfare transformative interventions. And so then that research, which ended, it went to about 2021, was used to underpin the Biden's regulation that was put into practice in April 2024. And then through a series of public records requests, what we found is that the people who had developed those interventions through that research group were actually in direct contact with the Biden administration, influencing and helping to guide kind of some of the nuances of the regulation. So we know for sure that the people who, for example, or, some of the things that you just read with these interventions were absolutely through the regulatory process influencing something that's going to be pushed now nationwide.
Yeah, and we just need to keep monitoring this, and you guys specifically, because you're talking to us right now, I can tell you that the work you put out on X, formerly known as Twitter, the work is really good, and folks need to be reading this stuff, because you, along with your fellow journalists, the Daily Caller, and other organizations, are doing a great job at uncovering things that no one's talking about. And this is a story you're not going to see in many other places, and that's why I wanted to have you on as a parting shot on this issue, as a parting shot across the bow. What would you encourage South Carolinians to do? Because that's predominantly who's listening to this. And you alluded to it earlier. This is happening in a county in Ohio. Ohio is red. Ohio's conservative on almost every issue. See the life vote. But what would you say to South Carolinians who look around and they go, well, we passed a help not harm bill, which we did. I don't think we need to be worrying about any of this. What would your response be to that?
I mean, I would say that we need to recognize the times we're living in and understand that we need to be equipped and educated and informed, and that we can't. I mean, I know as a parent myself, sometimes it's exhausting because I feel like, oh my gosh, I have to just be so aware of like every all of these things. And honestly, researching this stuff, I mean, it's very heavy. It was difficult sometimes to read all of this and to actually have the knowledge of what's going on. But it's so important because ultimately we want to protect the kids in our community. And I think if all of us are as parents, our primary calling is to protect our own children. But then I think we are also called to be, I mean, I'm a Christian, to be salt and light in our communities. And we do that through being informed, by being involved, and finding out what are the policies of your local child welfare system. Do you what maybe ask your legislator, hey, have you looked into this? I mean, those are things that any person can do, and they do make a difference. So I think that we need to be in a time where people are proactively equipping themselves and understanding that this is not a we're way past the slippery slope of what could happen, and we're at this is actually happening right now. And don't wait until something happens to you or your family or someone you love to stop it. We have a calling to care for the children that are around us. And I think stopping vulnerable children from being a part of this horrible medical scandal is a great way to show love.
It certainly is. And I think that we can, as you look around us, it's easy to other people, if that makes sense what I'm saying. And I think very quickly we need to be of the mindset that no, there this is this while it is a lie, and while it is certainly not walking in truth and understanding of basic science and biology, we do know that there are other components to this that can be met. And we can work through those issues. We had Chloe Cole in Spartanburg last year, and listening to her story, you can see how that happens. You can see how someone comes to an understanding of, no, this is not me. I'm this delusion is not me. And I think we need to be striving to push for that, and but also really reaching out to our legislators. And I think that's a great point. And are you aware of this happening in other states? Because I can promise you, there are legislators in that building that don't know about this. And so call your state representative, call your state senator. That one may change come November, but find out now. Meg, thank you so much for joining us. This is a fascinating story, a fascinating piece of investigative journalism, one that will not end. I'm sure you guys are already looking at the next level. So we appreciate you taking the time and educating our listeners a little bit more on the issue.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was great to talk with
Of
you.
course, of course. And you can follow Meg on Twitter. We've tweeted out her stuff and retweeted her before, and she's done the same for us on some things when paths cross. So make sure to do that. Meg, thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening to this Friday edition of the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina, the Palmetto Family Matters Show.